you left Amerada Petroleum Company, I believe, in 1971.
I came to Tulsa in 1969. That was the same day that some of the Hess people came to Tulsa after he bought a large share of stock in the company.
You say Hess people, who?
Hess Oil and Gas.
Okay.
Leon Hess was the owner of that. A big block of Amerada stock came on the market, and Amerada could have bought it. They didn't, and Leon Hess did in his company. And he ended up causing the two companies to get merged together. I stayed around about a year after that. I didn't particularly like what was going on in the company. I decided I probably should look around, and I did. I interviewed two brothers here in town. They called me and said they'd like to talk to me. It was Dan Schusterman and Charles Schusterman. So they had a small company called Schusterman Oil Company. So I decided I'd go to work for them. I knew that Amerada was putting some properties on the market for sale, and I obviously knew a little bit about them. After I went to work for them, I asked them if they were interested in buying production, and they said they were. So I looked at two properties that Amerada sold. One was in California, one was in the Rocky Mountains. We ended up being the high bidder on the California production, and it was all of Amerada's oil production. Dan didn't want to do that, so it was just me and Charles that ended up buying all of that production. And Charles was very tied into the Jewish community here, and he brought in some partners to help, you know, fund the acquisition. So it started out me and him, a secretary and an accountant, and starting Sampson Resources. So I was running their oil production. I was really running Sampson with Charles. And then Dan and I got some farm outs from Amerada, three of them. And we drilled three Wildcats. Two of them hit and one of them didn't. So we got busy developing that. Then Dan had the opportunity to really take over a company called Andover Oil Company. It had enough revenue to really pay the overhead if we wanted to do that. So I had to decide, you know, what I was going to do. I knew Charles would end up running Sampson, and I could be a part of that. Or I could join Dan, and we could take over Andover and do that. And I knew Dan would let me run that company. So that's what I decided to do. So Charles ended up with Sampson, and we let him have Sampson Oil Company. And Dan and I kept developing the oil and gas properties we discovered and took over Andover Oil Company. So it was me and him and the secretary.
Yeah.
Started that.
And we now know the story about Charles and Lynn Schusterman and how they went on to be very involved in philanthropy. So that's all interesting, what you just stated. So then what was your position there at Andover Oil Company? President or vice president? Or?
President. It was a private company. What we decided to do was look for properties to buy and exploit them. And that's what I learned to do, you know, working 10 years with Amerada. So I hired a guy, another engineer, to help me look for properties, evaluate them, and then run them. And his name was Joe Bob Hilly, and he was a petroleum engineer that worked for Sun Oil Company at the time. I heard about him, went out to Midland, interviewed him and hired him, and he brought his family to Tulsa, and we started looking for deals. And this was in 1972. And we ran that company for 10 years, till 82. And we bought a lot of production during that time. When we bought the oil and gas properties out in California, oil price at that time was $1.67 a barrel, and gas was 13 cents an MCF.
So what year was that?
That was 1971.
And then I should track you. You're a fairly young man here. You're in your 30s, 40s when you're doing this.
Yeah, 35.
35 years old. That's young, and a lot of good things are happening to you. So the California experience was good?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't involved with it all that long. You know, I was involved with it for probably 2 years, but I still have... I was assigned certain interest in the wells out there. I still have them. They're still producing. Hmm. They were 30 years old when we bought them in 1971.
Did you discover a new way to bring oil up, or why would somebody sell an oil-producing field unless they had other interests?
Well, they had other fields, and these were marginal properties to the company that owned them.
Okay.
When fields get marginal, there's not a lot of attention paid to them. So they just kind of move, flounder along. They don't have much money spent on them. So if there's upside to them, it's real easy to make them produce more oil. And that's what I was trained to do.
How do you produce more oil from a marginal well field?
Okay, well, there are a lot of wells that you can work on. Some of them, if there's a gas well, maybe it needs a compressor set on it, and you can produce more gas if you set a compressor. Or maybe a well needs to be stimulated. Maybe there's scale that's formed, and scale does form in these wells, and you can acidize a well that removes the scale and lets more production come in. There may be zones behind the pipe that hadn't been recompleted into. And you look at all the well records and the logs and any cores that have been taken to find any prospective zones. And there are. I mean, there's quite a few. Maybe a well needs to have a bigger pumping unit put on it, an oil well. Or maybe you can inject water and start a water flood. You can put chemicals in a well to remove asphaltenes that build up and let more fluid come in. There's just a lot of different ways to do it.
It was a gamble to buy, and you weren't sure you could do all this.
Well, you have subtle production when you buy a producing field, let's say, and you forecast that production, and you know what the operating costs are, and you determine if you can cut those operating costs. And we found that we could reduce operating costs by about 30% if we bought these properties from a major oil company that were, you know, getting rid of their lower tier properties. And we knew we could do that because their operating costs are generally too high. And you would forecast the decline rate on these wells that do decline, and then you would apply whatever oil and gas prices you want, and then you have a revenue stream that you can evaluate to see what you're willing to pay for that revenue stream. But then on top of that is the upside that you think is there by either recompleting wells or setting a compressor or doing all the other things I mentioned. And it just depends on how comfortable you are, how certain you are that you can make that happen, as to whether you give any other value for that upside. And usually you have to give some value to it to be able to be competitive in a competitive situation where people are bidding on properties.
So maybe I'll take the word gamble out of this. That wasn't a gamble. You were able to study it, and pretty sure. Compared to something else, did you take a big gamble on some other acquisition?
No. Later on, it became more difficult. Starting out, it was the major company selling, basically. They would do their own data room and have all the information there, and it was up to you to go through it. Later on, the later 80s, there were companies that would come in and evaluate this stuff, and they would say you could do a lot of things with all this production, and it became a lot more competitive at that time. It became a little bit more risky, but we could always forecast the revenue stream of existing production pretty well. If you were trying to forecast the early life of a new producing well, that became more risky.
Yeah.
And that was a risk later on, that when you were trying to place value on infill drilling wells, which we did a lot of, then that became a little bit more riskier.